You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
Oh, yeah, it's very fresh in my mind. I came over, well, I got out of work, and then I was like, you know what, I'm going to go and run a couple of errands, and then I'm going to text Jeff and be like, yo, bitch, I haven't watched this movie yet. I'm going to just come over there so that way we can watch the movie and then talk about, like, whatever website business we were going to talk about. And so we start watching it, and we started it at, what, like, 2 o'clock?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, you came in and the movie was still going on.
It's a long movie,
man. It's a long fucking movie.
Yeah, I should have warned you.
Yeah, I can't believe that somebody really, like, saw this and went, oh, 2 hours of Adam Sandler. That sounds like a good idea. And it wasn't like Paul Thomas Anderson. Welcome to the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
And mine's Joel.
And this is where we talk about movies. Mostly bad movies. Sometimes they're good movies. They're just not given their proper due. But what we do is we take your suggestions and movies that we see that we're like, huh, I haven't seen that. What do you think? You want to watch that? And then we take a look at it, and then we give you our opinions and bring that to the forum here. This week, we did a little Adam Sandler action because Adam Sandler's kind of a special case.
When That's an understatement.
Yeah. When I was in high school, I worked for a Cinemark theater in Plano.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when this little movie called Billy Madison came out.
Oh, Christ.
And I remember sitting in there. I was like, I don't know what this movie's all about. I had some, a little bit of time to kill before my shift started. Mm-hmm. And usually if you got there early, you just sat down, watched a movie, and then clocked in afterwards.
Nice.
And so I sat down and watched this movie, Billy Madison, and laughed my fucking
balls
off.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I still do. To this day, that's still one of the funniest movies I've ever seen. There's something about, like, Adam Sandler, like, with Billy Madison, that was big. Then Happy Gilmore happened, mm-hmm. and people loved Happy Gilmore.
Right.
And he was kind of like this new age of, like, the goofball comedy darling. Then something, like, horrible happened, and everybody kind of, like, turned on Adam Sandler.
What was that horrible, Joe?
Well, I don't know. It's
Little Nicky?
To me, it was, like, around The Waterboy. And I hated The Waterboy.
I hated The Waterboy, too.
And
there you go.
I didn't like Little Nicky. Like,
I hated
all of the movies where he, like, affected this horrible, like, voice, mm-hmm. I noticed. Like, wow, The Waterboy, he had that accent going on. And Little Nicky, he had that horrible voice
that
going
lisp
on.
With, yeah.
I liked The Wedding Singer quite a bit.
Wedding Singer's great. Mm-hmm. Wedding Singer's probably my favorite Adam Sandler movie, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just because it's a good mix of you know, romance. It's got a little something for the girls, for the ladies.
Uh-huh.
And it's still got, like, the screwball comedy that Adam Sandler became known for. But it had more of a heart. And it was also, like, a heavy period piece. And I think that really played a lot into it. You know, it was set in the 80s. People are, it's a CD player, you know?
Yeah. No, you know, the whole, like, take off that shirt or the band's going to break up when she's wearing the Van Halen shirt.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of cute moments in The Wedding Singer. Yeah. And like you said, it does have a lot of heart. Unfortunately, I believe that that's where Adam Sandler's, like, love affair with the 80s, like, really shone through.
Oh, yeah.
And now we can't get through an Adam Sandler movie without, like, a horrible 80s soundtrack
in
all of his movies.
And this,
like,
one is
this one opened up with, like, horrible 80s soundtrack. We start off with The Cars. It's Magic.
Ugh.
And it's like, geez, come on, man.
And then we got The Cranberries, which plays a theme throughout the entire movie.
More of a 90s.
Is that
90s?
Oh, I guess it is. That's like early 90s.
It's late 90s.
And not bad, I would say. I like that song.
I worked in soft rock radio when it came out.
Okay.
So I am not a fan of that. And I'm not a fan of, what was the cover they did? There She Goes.
Dude, those are great from So I Married
there
an Axe Murderer.
Goes Again.
You want to talk about a movie that, you know, bangs that into the ground? They play that song like 3 times in So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Yes. But they
and
played,
then again in the credits.
They played both versions.
Oh, that's right.
They played both versions of that song, and they played both versions of the Bay City Rollers Saturday Night.
Oh, they do, don't
that
they?
Movie.
That's
right.
Because
they play the remake
a
and they play the original Bay City Rollers version.
Yeah, see
that. But the thing is, that movie had still, despite those, had a great soundtrack to
mm-hmm.
it.
Absolutely.
But we're not here to talk about So I Married an Axe.
I wish we were.
Which was really a great film. We're talking about the ad. We haven't even said what it is that we've watched.
I think you've shown your hand.
We watched the movie Click.
Yes, 2006. Click.
I'd never seen this.
No, I hadn't either.
I don't know if I could say I pride myself on the fact that I've seen all of the Adam Sandler movies, but
nope,
I've
you can't
seen
say that.
Almost all of Adam Sandler's films, except for a lot of his, like, recent ones, like Grown Ups, Grown Ups 2.
Oh, yeah.
The one where he's going to Africa with Drew Barrymore.
Shut up. Oh, you're talking about the new one that came out, Blended?
Yeah, Blended. And there's that one he did with Jennifer Aniston.
Did he do one with Jennifer Aniston?
He sure did, yeah. It's
See, that got off my radar. I really only like three Adam Sandler movies, and you've already named two of them.
Right.
What is it? Billy Madison and...
Happy Gilmore.
Happy Gilmore and, you and like The Wedding Singer. Yeah,
about Punch Drunk Love?
I don't call that an Adam Sandler movie. That is a Paul Thomas Anderson movie starring Adam Sandler.
But like that,
and
is,
I like it.
That's, I mean, that movie, you really get a great feel for the range that this guy could have.
Absolutely.
If he just jumped out of his comfort zone a couple times in his career, you would have more stuff like this. He holds that movie down, and he does a great job of it.
Actually, I think that's a good question. Did that movie come out after this? This came out in 2006.
No, Punch Drunk Love came out before.
That did come out before. Uh-huh. So this was almost like his answer to, see, I can do comedy and I can do drama.
Right.
And this is what we get. We're left with Click.
And they tried, in this movie, they tried to do both.
Yeah.
Which was...
unsuccessful in
I
your
think
eyes?
I think it was fairly unsuccessful. I don't know if I can be properly objective about it, because it could be the worst movie in the world, but if we focus too long on a parent dying, it's hard for me. It's hard for me to step outside of it, step outside of myself, because it just takes me back. And I'm not I'm not saying that to be like, guys, give me sympathy now. Like I'm trying to fish for sympathy.
Absolutely not.
I'm just saying, like, honestly, it's hard for me to watch anything involving losing a parent and like not disassociate.
And I will extend it to all themes in life, things that happen. Like, I remember, you know, not really getting into a movie about breakups until going through my first breakup.
Yeah.
And then you see a movie I guess it was 500 Days of Summer. Uh-huh. Well, that entire movie is like, that's the epitome of breakup movies. It's literally about that relationship from beginning to end. And you know that going into it. That's no spoiler.
It's
fantastic.
Good.
But having seen that after going through a breakup, and I don't mean immediately after, this was years after, now you have something to relate to. And it's like, oh, God, I remember what that feeling is like. And so I kind of understand where you're coming from. But that's what movies do.
Love them. It's true. It's so funny. Like, I really loved 500 Days of Summer, and I never really associated anything in my life to it.
Yeah.
Until I had my first kiss with Sarah.
Aww.
And then suddenly, like, I was completely thinking of, like, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt bit where he's, like, dancing to Paul
with the
to
birds.
Hall & Oates.
Isn't that great? The little animated birds.
I was like, that's totally how I feel right now. That is exactly how.
You make my dreams come true. Listener, if you haven't seen 500 Days of Summer, that is a fantastic film.
You need to do yourself
a
favor.
It's so inventive and just creative storytelling that has now been ripped off. When did that come out? Maybe 5 or 6 years ago?
Probably. Yeah. No, you're probably right. Probably 2009.
Yeah.
2010-ish.
Yeah, I guarantee you've seen something that's been inspired by something that happened in that movie, even
Easily.
If you don't know it.
Easily.
But go back and watch it. Of course, it's got Joe Golev.
Uh-huh.
And then regardless
Zooey Deschanel.
Regardless of what you think about Zooey D.
What do you think it is about her? I know this has nothing to do with Click, mm-hmm. but what do you think it is about Zooey Deschanel that makes her so polarizing?
She is very polarizing. I think she's adorable, but she's almost like she knows she's adorable.
Uh-huh.
Like she's like the obnoxious chick who, oh, isn't she cute? And then you get to know her and you realize she's doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
Like she's trying to hit those buttons on you.
Gotcha.
It's like, bitch, don't push my buttons.
It was cute when we thought you were doing it, like, you know,
you're
by
just
mistake.
Naturally,
but now
exactly.
You're just deliberately being cute. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, Cameron Diaz.
That doesn't sound fair. Cameron Diaz can't be cute. As hard as she tries, she cannot be cute. I keep thinking about that scene in Charlie's Angels where she's dancing around in her underoos, and I'm like, please stop.
No.
Just stop. You're someone's
ass.
Grandmother now. Just stop. So Click.
Click.
You know what? We explore kind of similar themes in Click that we've already seen in movies that we've talked about before, Joel. It's that working dad who's trying to make a good life for his kids, and, you know, just no matter what he does, he feels like he's being put upon by everybody else around him.
Well,
he's just overwhelmed with responsibilities and duties. That split him between
duties.
I should have fucking known better.
Like the first 15 minutes almost plays out like Hook does. And I was like,
like
we
Hook
just watched this movie a month
Jack
ago.
Frost.
Jack Frost, where it's like the father and it can't come to the son's game. And of course, in this case, it's what is he not coming? Oh, it's his swim meet.
Swim meet.
And he's too busy on the phone doing business stuff because he's an adult and, you know, that's where he's career focused and not very family
he's
focused.
He's trying to take care of his family.
Yeah, not bad with having that message reiterated through several movies if it's done well. But yeah, the premise, Joey, did you ever watch a little show called Amazing Stories? This was back in the 80s.
I did, yeah.
Spielberg produced, and they always had like a bevy of famous directors, you know, Spielberg being one of them. It was almost like
some Joe Dante stuff back then.
Yeah. It's almost like The Outer Limits or Twilight Zone, except without kind of the dark sci-fi. Well, there was always something fantastical.
There was something dark, but this was definitely a lot more like fantasy.
Yeah.
Something that was a little more positive and less scary for kids.
They were usually feel good. Yeah, it came on like Sunday nights. I remember with the family, we'd get home from church and Amazing Stories would be going. And
yeah.
Hopefully we didn't miss the first couple of minutes. That's okay. I had my VCR set. We'd always watch it.
Right.
There was an episode called Remote Control. Did you ever see this episode?
No, I didn't.
This is a direct ripoff of this, basically. This guy's got a tough life. And, of course, it's played for laughs, but not in the way that this Adam Sandler movie is. It's way over the top.
Uh-huh.
The wife's just getting a nagging bitch. And his kid is just a little brat.
Uh-huh.
Goes to this store to buy a new TV and gets his remote control. And it does exactly the same thing that happens in this movie. He's pausing real life. He's switching the channel. So he switches the channel from his wife, who's like overweight and nagging, and it becomes like this super hot model. So as I'm watching this movie, I'm reminded of that episode.
Wow.
Which is probably better than this movie. Of course, it was also 22 minutes, whereas this is coming in, like you said, just under two hours.
That's way too long to tell this story, which, you know, like we said, it starts off, it's this father who's put upon. He's got so many responsibilities and ends up getting, you know, he's got all these remotes. Like, they make a big deal of, like, we got all these remotes. We have remotes for the garage, remote right. for the ceiling fan, a remote. At one point, he mistakes a radio-controlled, like,
helicopter
controller for his TV remote.
Those things usually have, like, two joysticks.
Which this one does.
And
it's like, what, you honestly really think this is going to control your television?
Yeah.
So he's like, you know what? Everyone's got a universal remote. I'm going to the store. I'm going to get a universal remote. So he passes up, like, you know, Radio Shack, passes up Best Buy, and goes to Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yep.
What's funny, I was sitting here on the couch watching it with Jeff, and Jeff's like, I guess we know what company paid the most. And so, yeah, he goes into Bed Bath & Beyond to get a remote, and lays down on a bed,
mm-hmm.
and then he turns over, and he sees, like, there's this other room that says Beyond.
Which I thought was kind of a clever play on Bed Bath & Beyond.
I bet they
wrote that into the script first and then approached Bed Bath & Beyond.
You think so?
I mean, it was... How would you have done that scene if it were Best Buy?
I don't better, bester buys.
There you go.
I don't know.
No, but you're right.
You know what? You're probably right, Joel.
The minute his head hits that pillow on the bed,
uh-huh.
and then we cut, and it's like him rolling over and seeing
music.
That door.
Uh-huh.
You had the same thought that I had.
Yeah, was that? Like,
yep.
We were sitting here, and as soon as he laid on the bed, and he was like so tired,
yeah.
and I just look at it, I go. Okay, so the rest of the movie's a dream.
Yeah.
And Jeff just looks at me and goes,
You have the worst poker face ever.
He's like, Jeff. I've seen the movie, but I'm not going to tell you exactly if you're right or wrong. I'm like, no, I know. He's obviously fallen asleep. I mean, if you know anything about film, if you've studied anything about film, or, I mean, we say the term Chekhov's gun a million times on this podcast. Yeah. He laid on a bed, and there's no other reason to have him do that in this movie in the middle of a fucking store.
Right.
Other than, okay, he just now fell asleep.
Yeah. Because immediately afterwards is when he's introduced to...
to the remote that switches him, like, back and forth in timelines
and
in his life.
The Christopher Walken character.
Christopher Walken.
With the crazy... Christopher Walken's, like, doing an impersonation of Christopher Walken.
Yes.
In this movie. He's got the crazy hair. He even mispronounces remote control. Remote control. Like, uh-huh. he puts the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Well, you know the story about Christopher Walken whenever he gets a script, right?
No.
He gets the script and he asks that the punctuation be taken out.
Oh, really?
All the punctuation and
like
dialogue.
No commas, periods,
no commas, nothing. So that way he can interpret it the way that he wants to interpret it. So
that's
some of
not really how script writing works.
It's not. As someone who works tirelessly on scripts, I want you to pay attention to the punctuation,
the phrasing,
because there's a reason why these characters. It's a deliberate choice why characters say things the way they say them.
Yeah,
but
the
he insists that all the punctuation be taken out so that way he could do it himself.
Huh?
Yeah.
That
so that might explain
a lot of questions. Christopher Walken.
So yeah, this is where Adam Sandler gets the remote, and you know, at first it's just, oh wow, you know, you got this remote, a great universal remote. It's not until later on, while Adam Sandler's trying to do some work, that he's like fucking around with the dog, like, why can't you just be quiet? And he starts hitting the volume button, and his dog gets quiet.
Yeah, his mouth is still moving and barking, uh-huh. and he's not hearing anything.
And
he blames it like on, oh, I must be tired, or something about.
I know, right?
He had NyQuil and a Diet Coke or something, right? He's like, all right,
and a yodel.
That's what it was.
Yeah. He had some cough medicine and a yodel, and that makes acid.
Of course.
Because Hostess
Science.
Also paid a lot of money on this
Oh,
movie.
No shit, right? Yeah.
Because there's
always going for the
Twinkies mm-hmm. and yodel. I'm really surprised that they signed off on it, though, because they show, like, the dude gets completely, like, overweight from eating all these
and
things.
And everybody's like, you, that stuff will kill you.
Right.
Sooner or later.
So, like, Hostess is like, eh, it's true. It'll kill you. Why not? So, you know, through the in the course of the movie, he uses this remote to get past, like, the more complicated moments. If he needs to focus on a couple of things or get through a job really fast, he'll just fast forward it. And yeah. he'll make, you know, oh, I just fast forward me to when I get better. And so he fast forwards a few days, and he's over his cold.
Yeah, when's foreplay over?
Yeah, exactly.
Just get right to the good stuff.
So, yeah, that's what he does, and it ends up biting him in the ass because the remote is a self-aware learning remote.
It's, yeah.
I guess it's Skynet, and it becomes self-aware and decides that it's going to just automatically fast-forward through shit because it learns from what it is he's fast-forwarded from in the past. So, and all right, well, we'll just take it from here. And he skips over like another 20, 30 years in his life and misses out on a lot of key moments and stuff. Mm-hmm. And by the end, he learns a very important lesson about life and family and stuff.
And stuff.
So there you go. So what we have, Joel, I mean, you said that this movie ripped off an episode of Amazing Stories.
Yeah.
It's a Christmas story.
It's also
Charles
yeah.
Dickens, a Christmas Carol.
Yeah. Or It's a Wonderful Life, kind of a mashup
exactly.
of those two, basically.
Uh-huh.
Which is fine. I have no problem. You know, the whole idea of stories and them being retold in a different way, like, we're never going to stop doing that. One of my pet peeves is when people talk about, oh, Hollywood's not original anymore. They're just telling the same stories. Or I hear it when they're talking about
they're talking
making
about like they're remaking a the brand. Smurfs. Or they're bringing G.I. Joe to the big screen. It's like, all right,
exactly.
I get what you're saying.
But
there.
Even that, I give a pass because it's like, okay, yeah, they're capitalizing on you know brand awareness.
Uh-huh.
People know the name. That's how they're going to get them in the movie. But somebody still has to come up with a story. Somebody still has to write a script. Somebody has to make it watchable for an hour and 45 minutes.
I can see both sides. Okay. I can see that from a business standpoint, a Hollywood business standpoint, it makes sense. You know, hey, you can't blame these people for trying to make a movie out of something that's going to make some money.
Yeah.
That's fine. You know, even though, you know, you take Star Wars, for example, I'm really opposed to them. Even if J.J. Abrams is at the helm, we don't need more Star Wars films.
Oh, and you shut your dirty
mouth. If we're
going to
make more. No, dude.
I know. Shows off the tag.
If we're going to make more Star Wars films, they don't have to be Skywalker stories. You have a whole universe that you can tell a story from.
Well, luckily they're not going to be if you've been following the news, right? Have you read that?
What?
On top of the three on episode 7, 8, and 9. Every other year in between those, they're coming out with movies. There's going to be one about Han Solo.
Yeah,
What's the first one?
Boba Fett, Yoda. I'd read about that.
Yeah.
Because we saw how well an origin story for Darth Vader went. Hey, man, don't awe me. I'm not the one
I'm
that fucking
saying,
put them
you
together.
You get some better writers and directors in the seats and get Lucas.
We don't, but
the
there are so many other characters. We could introduce new characters now. We don't have to beat these dead horses into the ground.
I know, but like nobody's going to go see Ord Mandel, the movie.
Why? Why not?
Because nobody
Why
knows who he is.
See, Ord Mandel isn't a person, it's a place, Joel.
I do that every time. I did that last time, too.
Yes, you did. But what I'm saying is you throw Star Wars on something and you're like, okay, guys, we're making a Star Wars movie and it's this whole other thing, this whole other story about these new characters. I'd be excited as shit to go and see this.
Yeah.
Because it's a galaxy far, far away. There are so many other people that could be living interesting stories. It doesn't just have to be these people.
I hear you.
You know?
But then you run into, and this is the problem I had with Terminator Salvation, which is, you know, we've been through three Terminator movies, and they're rebooting that too, by the way.
Yes.
And finally, here comes Terminator Salvation. They got John Connor in the future. And I'm like, okay, great. We're finally going to get to the meat of, you know, we've spent all this time in the past. We spent all the time with young John Connor and Sarah Connor. Let's see what motivates him, what was going on in the time. And they spend it with this side character. And I'm like, that was a wasted opportunity.
We
had a movie. Tell the story that people want to see. So I can see why they'd be doing a Han Solo and a Boba Fett. Like, those are the characters that people want to know the origin story.
Or do you? Like, maybe this that whole John Connor thing should be a cautionary tale of like, you know what? We don't need a story about Han Solo. We don't need to know his past. We know the story of a scoundrel who became this a sympathizer for the rebellion and fell in love with a princess.
It's true.
That's the story I want to know.
Yeah,
that's really all I need to know.
I'd like to see how he became a scoundrel.
Then read the book.
So distressful.
Read the book.
Joe, I see movies so I don't have to read, okay?
Right. Which is the best way to describe someone who would love this movie, Click. Because this movie was I won't say that it's the worst Adam Sandler movie I've ever seen.
Oh, no.
It's by far not the worst. And in fact, it does have some moments of heart.
What is the worst?
The worst
Little
Adam
Nicky?
Sandler movie?
It's got to be Little Nicky.
God,
no, you like Little Nicky, Jeff?
I think it is Little Nicky.
Yes. Thank you.
For me, it's Little Nicky
the
for
eyes
my
have
money.
It.
I even like Don't Mess with the Zohan.
Forgot about that.
I like Don't Mess with the Zohan. I think that's actually a pretty funny movie.
I caught part of that on cable, and it made me chuckle. I'm not going to
lie. Well, it's written and directed by the same people who did Billy Madison.
There you go. That's
and,
why.
And that's why it's got kind of that same feel of the Billy Madison thing.
And bringing it back to Click, this movie was directed by the guy who did The Wedding Singer and Waterboy. That puts a whole new spin.
It's Peter Boyle. You want some water? Let me ask you a question. You feel thirsty.
Did a couple of James or Kevin James flicks.
Great.
So, but I'm just saying this is right up, you know. If you know one thing about Adam Sandler, it's like he's got his Click. And in fact, his 5 minutes
and,
into
and
this
movie, is a movie called Click.
Oh, nice. The other spelling, though. But I was the minute we chose this movie, I was like, all right, Robert Schneider's going to be in here at some point. And yeah. sure enough, five minutes in, doing that
he's
kind
the,
of racist.
He's Arab. The Iranian, the Arab prince at the beginning.
And I'll be honest. The first 15 minutes of this movie, I was really ruining our decision. Or at least... it was living up to my low expectations, which is never a good thing. Because Adam Sandler, like the movies or hate the movies, I think juvenile is a word that I can ascribe to his movies, right?
Yeah, when you focus on a dog, not three, not four, not five, but six or seven times,
humping
a stuffed animal, and like we focus on that, and it's like, oh, look at that, he's humping the stuffed animal, or Adam Sandler standing on a desk farting in David Hasselhoff's
face.
There
you go.
Yes, juvenile definitely
and
falls under
kicking
that category.
The balls. How many people get their balls kicked in this movie?
I think just one. Yeah. It was just Sean Astin like eight times.
No. Oh, yeah. David Hasselhoff just gets hit in the face. Anytime there's like, so the first 15 minutes, there's like TNA, a bunch of like hot chicks.
Oh, my God.
For no reason.
Like that office employs like all of the hottest chicks in New York City.
Apparently. And all of Adam Sandler.
And Rachel Dratch.
That's the other thing, too. You've got to have the juxtaposition. Oh, poor Rachel. Well, hey, good news and bad news, Rachel. We've cast you in this movie with Adam Sandler. The bad news is you're going to be surrounded by a bunch of Playboy playmates. And the joke is that you're ugly.
And you're going to be a man in the third act.
I know. Poor Rachel Dratch. But you've got that. You've got this kind of semi-racist ethnic humor. I'm using finger quotes, you know, with Rob Schneider. And even like the Asian family at the swim meet. Like, why did they have to be Asian? Oh, because people are, you know, so like when
because
you're 12
it
years
goes,
old.
Because it goes back to Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
And the Asian woman who's like, you don't want no breakfast?
I know.
He brings back his bits from every movie. Mm-hmm. If you pay close enough attention, every Adam Sandler movie is represented in his latest one. Like everything he's done up until that point, he basically copies and pastes one little bit from everything and puts it into his newest
movie. The name of his film company is Happy Madison. Even by name, he's ripped off of his two most popular properties.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, farting, TNA, ethnic humor, physical comedy, a lot of ball trauma. Like, that's what you expect from an Adam Sandler movie. I will say this, Joe. I don't think I hated this movie as much as you did. You really...
I really didn't like it. There were moments... Now, granted, there were moments that made me laugh. But, I mean, I think that's true for even the worst movie. You could still find stuff that's going to make you laugh a little bit. Yep. There were a couple moments where I'd laugh and Jeff's like, you're really enjoying this. And I'm like, well, I mean... No, not really. I mean, this thing made me laugh, but I wouldn't say that I'm enjoying this film.
Yeah.
It was offensively long, Joel.
There's no reason
this movie was this long, and it couldn't find its tone. It had no idea what it wanted to be. At one point, about halfway through the second act, this movie forgot what it wanted to be.
Or did it realize what it was trying to be? See, I almost look at it at the opposite, which is like the first 15 minutes are just to kind of lull the audience into, hey, it's an Adam Sandler movie. You're going to get what you came for. You're going to get the fart jokes. You're going to get the juvenile humor. And then really kind of took it to a deeper place. Which I appreciated because they could have stayed surface. You call it like long. It didn't need to be this long. I felt it. I would use the word ambitious. I felt like this was a really ambitious movie because
I feel
it could
like it's too little too late by the point that you're talking about.
I hear you.
I feel like it's too little too late. If you wanted to engage me on an emotional level, you should have tried fucking harder a little bit earlier on. And I think you and I can agree on that point.
Yeah.
But I think like by the time we get to the end, I didn't care. You know, I didn't mind like... It's so funny how we're looking at this from two different points of view, but I think we agree completely on it. The beginning, I got exactly what I was expecting from an Adam Sandler movie. And I was like, all right, okay, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to be expecting. Cool. And then I kind of resented the second half because it wanted me to care more about it.
No, I hear you.
But it didn't do enough to build it earlier on for me to give a shit. And it's harder for me to actually go like, all right, I care now. I kind of care now a little bit more about what's going on. You know, it is what it is. I felt like there's this moment and there's no lead into it. It just kind of decides, bam, now I want to be emotionally deep, and I want you to care deeply about what's going on here. I don't
see, and I thought it was a more of a gradual decline, kind of going down that path as we see him all of a sudden
when he was quickly fast forwarding through life. You found that gradual?
No, I'm just saying we go from him skipping, you know, like minutes to then hours and then days and then and now we're like skipping months and then he's skipping years and every time there's a longer stretch of time that passes, you really kind of start to feel it getting out of control and unwanted.
I didn't see it represented. I think it's the casting. I think it's who our leading man was that we're supposed to be sympathizing for.
Okay.
I kind of feel like if it was somebody else, I maybe would have cared a little bit more about what was going on here. But because it's Adam Sandler, I'm ready for the next goo.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Like, I don't know what the fuck. I'm ready for that. I'm ready for goofiness.
But if the entire movie were just that and it never tried to say anything more about the concept, because it could have stayed on the surface and just been like, okay, he's going to fast forward through sex, the stuff he doesn't like, fast forward through driving, he's playing tricks. What was it with that little neighbor kid that he had this kind of feud
O'Doyle,
with?
Who is the name of the bullies in Billy Madison.
Oh, is it?
O'Doyle rules.
I didn't make that connection.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Is it the same?
What was
actor,
I just
right?
saying, Jeff? He takes shit from every one of his previous movies and injects it into his current one. Every movie he makes. Every movie he's made after Happy Gilmore has been a best of Adam Sandler.
And they're all like blockbusters.
Uh-huh.
I should take this point to mention, though. This is the most profitable, as of 2010, I think Wikipedia said, this is the most profitable Adam Sandler film.
Is it really?
Come out. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Wow.
And maybe the most polarizing as far as critics go on Rotten Tomatoes. 32% of critics, so I think they're kind of where maybe we are. But 67% of audiences,
Jeez.
He's got that following. They will go see anything.
He does.
I'd be curious as what the lowest rated one. It's probably Little Nicky.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Jeff could take a look at that. We could find out what the lowest rated
Adam
Sandler
film
is.
But I appreciated that it didn't just stick with playing pranks on the kids and trying to get to work faster and trying to further his career. Then it really got into family. And there's a deeper message there about time and wasting your time and making use
it's
of it and appreciating
deep.
The family.
It's
when
not
you
that
have
deep
one.
Of a message, though.
It's not that deep of a
you
message,
because it's a message that we're getting right at the beginning
right.
of the film.
But for an Adam Sandler movie, it is like Happy Gilmore. He's just got to win the girl and the is that the one? I get them confused.
Happy
now.
Gilmore
which is the one where he's golfing.
It's the one with Ben Stiller who works at the old folks' home.
There you go.
And he's got to make the money to get his grandmother's house back.
They're just flat out comedies. And like I said, I appreciate the ambition. At least this one had something it wanted to say. And you may not have been moved at the end, but I can find myself getting caught up. And maybe
but by that,
it was
by
the
that,
alcohol.
By virtue of that, I mean, you could talk that Little Nicky is at its heart a story about finding acceptance within yourself and, understanding that even if your parents aren't telling you what you want to hear, that they still love you and they care about you.
Yeah, but I didn't think the execution was nearly as well.
It's not, but I think you and I are going to be on opposite ends about how well we think this movie was executed.
Let me ask you this. There was a Jim Carrey movie that came out a few years ago called Yes Man. You ever see that one?
Yes.
Yes, Man.
With Zooey Deschanel.
Oh, yeah, Zooey D. What do you know?
Uh-huh.
What were your thoughts of that movie?
I didn't like it.
See, and I liked that movie.
Yeah.
The faults and all, and again, maybe it's just because I'm projecting my own shit on it, but that movie kind of really made me not stop and think, but anytime when you're forced, you sit down to watch a movie and they're going to tell you something. And that one really made you think about, what are you doing with your life? What could you be doing with your life this time that you have?
You know what? A movie that I think did that concept way better?
Yeah.
The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Which I haven't seen yet.
It's a fantastic
film. I just rented it the other day.
I let my sister borrow it. We did lunch yesterday, and I was like, here, you need to watch this and let me know what you think about it. I always tell my sister, like, we get into talking about film and stuff, and she'll ask me what's good, what's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. I think it's just because I'm a cinemaphile.
Oh, absolutely.
And she knows that. And it's really funny. I try not to review stuff. For a long time, I used to be a movie reviewer for a website called PopSyndicate.com. And that was when I really had to sit down. Like, I'd go to middle of the day movie screenings where it's like me and four other movie reviewers in town in a theater watching films we never thought we'd see. Like, that's where I saw this movie, this Michelle Pfeiffer movie, Sherry, which was fucking horrible. I saw this movie called The Stoning of Soraya M.
Oh, I've heard
of that. I thought was going to be terrible, and I left the theater fucking crying my eyes out.
Oh, really?
Oh, God, yeah, it's totally. But one thing that I learned while doing that is, and I. I kind of feel like you and I get a pass doing this because we're very self-deprecating while we're doing this. But I feel like people who get too much into reviewing films kind of become blowhards about it.
Oh, absolutely.
And I do also believe that even if you've done it horribly, I think something that you have to do before you start critiquing film, you have to have made something.
I know.
Because then you kind of understand the process. Because even the worst film, you sit there and you can go, I get what they were trying to do, though, and
absolutely.
I understand how difficult it was to try to do this thing. And, it, you know, obviously we don't give a pass to a lot of these movies because they have fucking million, you know, trillion dollar fucking budgets.
They should have been better.
So they should have been better. But with – well, I can't remember where I was going with this.
I don't know.
The Yes Man.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like Yes Man was – it's just a little too – it was a little too preachy, a little too on the surface, a little too predictable.
Sure.
Whereas, you know, the Secret Life of Walter Mitty, it plays that a little bit more gradually. And that's what I was telling my sister. And that's why she comes to me. She's like, what's your opinion? You know, what do you like about this movie? And I try not to be too blowhardy about it. Like, oh, you got to watch these. But she asked, you know, which one of the movies from last year do you think was really the best picture? And I was like, none of them. None of the ones that were nominated did I think really.
Oh, no.
I thought it was,
it was,
you know,
a horrible.
And that's why I led her to movies like The Spectacular Now, the Way, Way Back.
Also good and overlooked, yes.
About Time. And
oh, see, I didn't like that one.
You didn't like About Time?
No.
Oh, God, I love that movie.
And there's an example of a movie that I think got away from what it was trying to – like the message became like too broad. Like that whole side story with the sister being abused and having to go back, and I was just like, this movie
it was
is
a
off
device.
Track.
I'll give you that. It was a device. It was a device to basically – it's how he learned the lesson of the consequences of his actions.
Sure.
That you can't have one and also have the other. You need to pick one or the other. You need to – almost kind of like with this movie Click, that he needs to pick one or the other. He can't just focus on work and he can't just focus on family, but he needs to make sure that it's a healthy balance, but that he does put family first.
Yeah, but the story should have been focused on him instead of the sister.
I agree.
Especially in the third act of that movie, like all of a sudden we're introducing these new storylines.
I agree.
And then resolving
you.
Them before resolving his own.
But I still found it to be one of the most touching films of the year.
Okay,
year.
Now touching, I'm not going to disagree with you there. The chemistry between him and
Bill Nighy.
Bill Nighy is fantastic.
Oh, my
movie.
God. Yeah, it's really good.
And that last – I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, no, don't spoil
it. Yeah, because it's
don't
a good movie.
It. It's fantastic. But that's – I tell her, I'm like, you know, watch that and watch – those
yes.
those four movies were my favorite movies of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so she'll – you know, she goes and she watches them and stuff. But again, getting back to Secret Life of Walter Mitty, you know, you really should check that out because I think it does what Yes Man tries to do.
Okay.
It does it better. About like going out there and just fucking doing something. What are you doing with your life? Go live it. Stop living it through a computer screen and go and actually fucking experience it.
As I sit here looking at my iPad, recording a podcast that's going to go on the internet.
And
not you, listener. You stay put and
stay put and
episode.
Listen to our stuff. So no, but you know, and we kind of get that with this, that you know, it's important for you to be participating in your family's life. And that's where Adam Sandler goes wrong is that, you know, every time he fast forwards, he's just on autopilot. He's not actually taking an active role in the lives of his children, with his wife, with his parents, and he ends up missing out on key moments.
Yeah.
And I think anybody can sympathize with that and identify with that. But I had a hard time really giving a shit because it was Adam Sandler. Like I said, though,
true.
You know, when it came point to the point where, spoiler alert, you know, he finds out that his father passed away, and so he like rewinds to the moment where he last saw his dad.
It's heavy stuff.
I'm like, okay, this is heavy stuff. And then, you know, what happens with him at the end with his children? Another point where I'm like, oh wow, you know, this is kind of heavy stuff. Still don't really like this movie, but
no,
is heavy stuff.
I'm not going to say it saves it, and I'm still probably going to put this in the thumbs down category.
Uh huh.
But again, I give it points for trying to do something beyond just taking this premise and having it be all silly and getting revenge on the 12-year-old neighbor for
right.
some reason.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
He was getting revenge on everybody. He was getting revenge on everyone, and even people that didn't deserve it. You know, his kid's swim coach, played by Sean Astin.
I know.
He was just
it's like a really
automatically.
Nice guy.
He's a really nice guy, and just
happens to have a proclivity for speedos.
Well, that he hates him. The whole reason he doesn't like Sean Astin is because he didn't make it to his kid's swim meet on time.
Yeah,
Like, that's why he resents Sean Astin.
He's ashamed by him.
And so I kind of felt like it's asking the audience a little too much to get behind the protagonist of our film, bullying this guy.
Exactly, because it kicks him in the balls later when he freezes time. And even the same thing with, like, David Hasselhoff. Like, he freezes time and then punches him a bunch.
But who doesn't want to punch David Hasselhoff?
I know.
Well, he's just kind of despicable
but
anyway.
He's a sick, sick man, Joe.
Yeah.
If you look through past that and
and just watch the cheeseburger video.
Oh, I know.
The drunk cheeseburger video.
Poor Hoff.
Oh,
did this come out? This must have been before then.
Before the cheeseburger video, right? God, I think it was after.
Was it? Ugh.
Yeah, Jeff, when was the cheeseburger video? He's like, do you want me to look up this fucking movie? What was the lowest grossing Adam Sandler film?
All of a sudden he has
assignments. May have been Bulletproof.
I forgot about that.
Do you remember that one with Damon Wayans?
I do now that you mention it.
Because like, I think that one came out in like 2 theaters.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can, well, I guess, yeah, we can call that an Adam Sandler film. I mean, he was a star of it.
What about the Chuck and Larry one? People hated the Chuck and Larry one.
I kind of thought Chuck and Larry was all right. I dug the message behind it.
Oh,
kind of like how I guess they're very hit or miss. I think they're very subjective to whatever it is that touches you, that works for you. Adam Sandler's weird that way.
Yeah, he is.
So what did you think about I have no choice but to call it stunt casting. In this movie, you know, the David Hasselhoff is the boss. Because I don't understand why anyone would cast David Hasselhoff in their major motion picture.
it's the irony of it.
Yeah.
He was in that right place, right time. People knew him from Knight Rider back in the 80s. And, there you go.
The 80s
Another
thing.
80s,
the 80s
thing,
connection.
Now that you mention it.
Uh-huh.
Although I mentioned it. But
you did mention it.
He was kind of a punchline. I mean, you know, he was the Gary
literally,
Busey.
He was literally a punchline.
Literally a punchline.
Uh-huh.
He's one of those guys who just having him in your movie, yeah, it's stunt casting. Makes it funny for no reason.
Click was before the cheeseburger.
Click was before the cheeseburger
See,
video.
I thought so. I don't know that.
06 was Click. The video was 07.
Okay, so it was a year later.
There you go.
He had already spent all of his Click money.
And that's what I was going to say. I don't think, you know, Adam Sandler may have wanted him in his movie post-cheeseburger. I don't know that the studio probably would have been afraid of getting heat for exploiting David Hasselhoff. Although, we haven't really had that problem with Gary Busey.
No.
A man who clearly has mental issues, literally brain damage.
Have you seen the Amazon Fire TV commercials?
I know. And if I didn't know that he was in a huge motorcycle accident that left him mentally paralyzed,
yeah,
it'd be funny. Uh-huh. Except it's almost
it's
like...
sad.
It'd be like if we took somebody with Down syndrome and made them your spokesperson.
Yeah.
It's no different.
Like the I Sort Glass video.
Yeah.
From the early 80s, you know what I'm talking about. If you want, you can go to YouTube and look up I Sort Glass. And it's this back before there was any like political correctness or anything like
I'll
that.
Say.
They produced these videos about like this coalition for, you know, the better treatment of people with, you know, with mental and physical handicaps. Mm-hmm. And it was all about like, I think one of the taglines was "Don't throw us away. We are also, you know, contributing members of society."
Right.
But it's like you follow this guy in a glass sorting factory. And it's sad. It makes you feel bad watching it. And nowadays, like, you would never see something like that.
No.
You would never exploit somebody to that end.
Mm-hmm. There's an old movie called Freaks. Is that what it's called? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Yeah, with the guy who's like, you know, he's got no legs.
It's like a paraplegic. Yeah, where they actually use,
yeah,
like, you know, Elephant Man type freaks.
Uh-huh.
Old black and white movie.
Yeah.
I can't recommend that either. But again,
you can't
do that nowadays.
Would you recommend Click over Freaks?
Well, at least
in Click, you get Kate Beckinsale.
Oh, my God.
The first thing I said, I was like, how the fuck are they going to justify a woman like Kate Beckinsale being with Adam Sandler?
This is the Kevin James effect, like I was talking about last week with Leanne Remini?
Leah Remini.
Leah Remini.
Uh-huh. And Kevin James has also been paired up with, like, Salma Hayek.
Yeah. Oh, in the
Here
Hitch.
Comes the Boom.
Wait, who's the girl in Hitch?
In Hitch, it was I can't remember who the girl was. I know Will Smith gets with Eva Mendes in that movie, but I can't remember. The girl that they're trying to hook up.
She's just like
Kevin
a skinny
James
blonde.
With, she's a gorgeous skinny blonde, and I think she's a name, but I can't remember who she
still
was.
Still out of his league, probably. But
convinced it's these chicks that are gorgeous.
Kate Beckinsale
with these dudes.
She must be a vampire. She does not age.
She is. Have you seen Underworld?
I have seen Underworld, and I was about to cite that because in that movie that came out 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Like if you watched that, and then I showed you the remake of Total Recall, and asked you how far apart these movies came out, you'd probably say, like, "Oh, 9 months, maybe, a
couple months,
2 years,
dude." The Last Days of Disco. No, I would throw that up and be like, okay. Kate Beckinsale. How much time? You haven't seen? Oh, okay. It was a movie that came out like in the early to mid-90s. Oh,
but she's adorable.
Oh, God. She's gorgeous. She is absolutely gorgeous.
The hair.
And all they have, the hair is wonderful. She's just cute. Mm-hmm. And like the whole time, she's just running around in these cute little tank tops and, you know, either these little yoga pants.
The
or
very first shot of her is like her in a belly shirt, uh-huh. like reaching out of something in the cupboard.
To get something in
the
cupboard.
And it's just like, that shot's only in there because it gives guys chubbies.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished.
Uh-huh. No. Filmmakers. And seriously, like, Jeff and I had to like look at each other and be like, hey, dude, maybe we shouldn't look in each other's direction for about a half
hour. Why don't you get on the other side of the couch? Well, I'm going to put this pillow in between us.
Or else we're about to make like the dog and the stuffed duck.
and there you go. For every sweet moment in this movie, and then it's ruined by dogs humping inanimate objects.
Fucking so much product placement in this movie.
Oh, yeah. I didn't notice that. Between the Twinkies and the
And Best Buy and Wendy's. At one point, he's driving at the very beginning when he's going to get to the remote.
That's right.
He's driving down the road and you see a Wendy's sign in the background. I'm like, and I was about to say it to Jeff. I'm like, watch. In a few seconds, he's going to have like a Wendy's burger in his mouth. And they cut to inside the car, a bag of Wendy's, and he's getting fries out and just eating fries while he's driving. It's like, Jesus,
see,
man.
I'm so immune to that stuff now, I guess. It doesn't work on me. Advertising doesn't work on me.
It doesn't work on me. Advertising doesn't work on me, but holy shit, like, there's a smooth way of doing it. Like, you know what? I kind of feel like
E.T. and the Reese's Pieces?
No, that's so obvious, too. No, I'm talking more along the lines of, like, the latest Marvel movies, like Iron Man 3, even, you know, the new Captain America, for that matter. Like, they're able to throw some, like, They're kind of smooth about the way they throw in the product placement. They're kind of creative about it instead of just like, hey, I'm going to run to Best Buy. Turn up the fun.
I remember CSI. You ever watch CSI? They were the worst ones because they would say the full names of, oh, let me look it up on my Samsung Galaxy S3. It's
who the fuck
would say that? Nobody says it.
Oh,
then you have to have like these product placement shots that way overlive their welcome.
Uh-huh.
That's on their screen for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Showing the interface. It's like, there's like a murderer following you. Shouldn't you be?
You know, one of the shows that did it in a very, it was a shameless way, but it was still actually kind of funny the way they did it. I don't know if you remember this. The show Chuck was in danger of being taken off the air.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting saved through their integrated marketing.
Huh.
They had this deal with Subway. And so like the colors of the store that Chuck worked at, the Buy More, green and yellow.
Oh, interesting.
And then everybody in the place, whenever they were in like the lunchroom, they had Subway
sandwiches.
And in fact, like they would even have some of the dialogue of the characters be like, I'll be right there after I finish this tasty meatball sub
from
Subway.
But they're doing it
but
for laughs.
But they were doing it for laughs. It was a very tongue-in-cheek way, but that's how they did their product integration, and that's how they were able to stay on for like – it saved their third season.
Interesting.
Which was their best season. The show should have ended after three.
Oh, so basically Subway – we have to thank
Subway.
Chuck.
Saved Chuck. Yeah. So there are ways to do it. There are creative ways to do it. And if you're going to be out and out about it, play it up. Be funny. This is a comedy. You could have played it up a little bit more.
Like Wayne's World.
They played up Bed Bath & Beyond, but they didn't play up really anything else. And I don't know. I just kind of it's a metaphor for this entire movie. It's just not as creative as it could have been.
It's the world we live in nowadays, Joe. Welcome to Obama's
it's the world
America.
That I know. Yeah. Okay. Anything else about this movie you wanted to talk about? You want to point out?
No.
That's a no. Okay.
I had to go through my notes and make sure we'd hit all the points.
So you said that you wouldn't recommend this to somebody.
I will. I will say one thing. So near the end of this movie, we deal with a little bit of time travel.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we go into the future, the way distant future of 2017.
Into the future.
You really got to be careful when you do a movie that goes into the future and then makes references. There's like a Britney Spears reference, but then there's a Michael Jackson like molestation reference. Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that. No, I didn't catch that.
Got young and molested himself.
Yeah, it's like on the radio. It's like Michael Jackson cloned himself, and he's now suing his clone for molesting himself.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Ooh,
I think
that's
something
you got to go back on the DVD and pull out. And then there's like a Twin Tower where the Twin Towers used to be. They have the two Freedom Towers because that was the original plan.
Yes,
there were gonna be two Freedom Towers. Oops, sorry, we only made one, and now
it's
forever
in this movie. It's an alternate timeline. It's an alternate future.
I know, I guess, but it's still it pulls some Band-Aids off of wounds.
Yeah, it does.
That don't need to be revisited.
So you wouldn't recommend this movie?
No, horrible time travel references. No, no. You know what?
That's why.
If you like Adam Sandler movies, and see, that's the thing. He is not my audience. Uh-huh. Or I am not his audience, yeah. Rather. He's probably not my audience either, actually.
I don't know. He might be.
Adam, if you're listening to this podcast.
Maybe he really likes commercials about insurance.
5 stars.
I only say that because I haven't seen anything
else.
That's
the one thing I've done.
I haven't seen anything.
That's my magnum opus, Jeff.
No, it's not. I'm pretty sure it's not. No, you are definitely not at the.
No, I'm not an Adam Sandler fan. Guy. And like I said, the ones that I do like are probably his most. Wedding Singer is probably the closest to an Adam Sandler-ish movie that I like. And I like Punch Drunk Love.
Did you ever see Rain Over Me?
Nah.
No, it's actually a pretty good flick. It's he plays, speaking of 9/11, his family dies in 9/11.
Oh, Jesus.
The 9/11 attacks, and he kind of becomes like this this head case kind of reclusive.
Huh.
He sits in his apartment all day playing Shadows of the Colossus on his PlayStation.
Oh.
And he befriends Don Cheadle, and Don Cheadle kind of becomes concerned about this guy, and I can't remember what it, I think there's some kind of trial going on, like, you know, a hearing to determine, you know, his state of mind, if he's of sound mind, if he can take care of himself, or if he should be, like, put into an institution or something. And Don Cheadle's trying to help him out. Meanwhile, his family's trying to have him institutionalized or whatever. And he starts making progress. You know, it gets close to him making progress, but then he just keeps devolving into that, you know, just so much pain and just trying to hide away from everything again.
Interesting.
I found it to be like a really touching movie, an excellent performance from everybody in that flick. And I thought Adam Sandler was particularly good in it. And it's movies like this that make me go, God, I really wish that Adam Sandler would stretch those wings a little bit and kind of, you know, try to be a little bit more dramatic and not like funny people, because that movie was fucking horrible.
Was just depressing.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, he has talent. He has heart. He can be in tune with people on a dramatic level, but I kind of feel like part of me can't blame him, but I kind of feel like he's like, why work that hard? Why do yeah. that when I can make millions of dollars just being goofy?
Doing Grown Ups 3. Doing,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Why even worry about that? So I don't know. I can't. And what's funny is I get the feeling that on a general level, I think I'm probably a bigger Adam Sandler fan than you are.
It sounds like it, yes.
And I can't recommend this movie. Can't recommend it. It's just too long. It's tired.
Yeah,
it's boring.
That's the problem.
And it's predictable. It's horribly predictable.
Yeah. How about the makeup, though? That'll be my last point I'll make about this movie. No, both, I thought the makeup was fantastic.
Both some of the best makeup and some of the worst visual effects I've seen in
the
movie.
Not visual effects. I'm talking about just practical. Just when they age Sean Astin.
With the practicals, yeah. They did
not
really good.
Not when it's his.
When he first wakes up and he's fat.
He's like overweight. Well, that was like
That was horrible.
They hired a fat guy and they just superimposed his face on it. Yeah.
That was horrible.
Yeah, it wasn't well done.
It looked so bad. But then, yeah. No, when he's outside and he's, you know, it's snowing out and he's talking to his wife and Sean Astin. Yeah, no, then it looked really good. And Sean Astin's makeup looked good. I love that Jonah Hill's in this movie for like 2 seconds.
With like a fake nose on.
Yes.
But even the Henry Winkler stuff.
Henry Winkler looks great. In fact, I pointed that out to Jeff in the flashback stuff. I was like, wow, that young makeup that they did for Henry Winkler looks really good.
I'm not sure if they did that digitally or not. I think they may have done what they did to Patrick Stewart in that one X-Men movie smoothed his face
out. That's probably what
they
did.
It didn't look good in the X-Men movie. It looked a little better here.
Uh-huh, it did.
And
Which is kind of like ridiculous since there's probably a 4 or 5 year gap between those two.
That's true. But yeah, Rick Baker got an Oscar nomination, I believe, for the
Did he really?
Yeah. I know.
Click has an Oscar nomination?
And just that one, folks.
Jesus. All right. So what did this movie do right other than the old age makeup? Or is that where you're going to go with?
I'll get there by talking about the makeup.
Uh-huh.
Man, I really like Henry Winkler in this movie.
Yeah?
The Fonz.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that he's the best thing about it, but...
He's the best performance in this movie.
He's certainly the best performance. Oh, and at the end there, when he's trying to get his son's attention, he's ignoring him, and then he just starts to cry at the end. Yeah, really heartbreaking.
Uh-huh.
He's just such a lovable guy.
It's really hard not to
like him.
Uh-huh. I'm so glad that those two have created like a relationship and that there is a movie where he plays his father, because they resemble each other so heavily.
Yeah.
Like they resemble one another.
He'll look like Henry Winkler in 30 years.
He already looks like Henry Winkler.
A little bit.
So Henry Winkler's the best.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Best thing about this movie.
And Christopher Walken.
What did the movie do wrong?
The first hour or half hour, really.
Uh-huh.
But that first, just the juvenile. Again, the semi-racism with the Arab guys.
Uh-huh.
I'm probably being racist by calling them
Arab guys.
um, And just the physical humor, like anytime you have to rely on like physical humor and fart jokes and, uh-huh. and you know, that type of stuff, have a little more respect for your audience.
They turn on a TV to a fart joke.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's on the TV.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, come on. We don't have to inception like fart jokes into an Adam Sandler film.
Yeah, I feel insulted as an audience member when it's like, oh, you're digging for laughs now.
Uh-huh.
It's like, you're better than this.
Yeah.
And I think the rest of the movie is better than this.
I think that...
you not so much.
I don't know, man. I'm on the fence about this. What I liked most about this movie, mm-hmm. I like the concept. I dig the concept. I think the concept is sound and, you know, it's worked. It worked for, you know, A Christmas Carol. It yeah. worked for It's a Wonderful Life. It worked yeah. for that amazing story's tale.
Absolutely.
It's a great concept and it's something that you can still identify with today with remotes and, yeah. you know, everybody wants to have some magical device. Everybody
Absolutely.
Wants a lightsaber. Everybody wants a Harry Potter magic wand.
Yeah.
And for something to be an everyday item that could be magical, it could be do this, it could do this, could do that. You know, it's almost, it's that genie in a bottle. But you don't have to mess with the genie. But mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's definitely one of those, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. Like, oh. you've got to be careful.
Did you
what
just
it
write that right
must...
now? Did
I did.
Come up with
that? Uh-huh.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah, should... I wrote that.
You should trademark that.
I have.
oh, sorry.
Under the name Stanley. so I think that the concept is sound. I like what they did with it. And there's some of the casting that I do like. There's some performances that I do enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Henry Winkler quite a bit in this movie. I even liked Sean Astin in the few parts that he was in.
I did too.
I dig, you know, he comes in. I'm not a Sean Astin fan.
Oh,
really? Other than the movie Goonies, like, I kind of like the stories that I hear about him that, like, you know, behind the camera.
Oh, really?
I don't like the shit that I hear about this guy.
Is he douchey?
Yeah.
A little douchey. I've heard that too.
And so I don't want to like him, but I kind of dug what he did in this film. I even like Kate Beckinsale. I think Kate Beckinsale. I do. God, she's gorgeous in this
Jesus
movie.
Jesus Christ.
Even when she gets to like 50, 60 years old,
and you're like,
she's
man,
still
milf,
great looking.
Milf,
exactly.
Even.
Like the Helen Mirren of this movie. But she still gives a very honest and genuine performance in this film.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
She's not given a lot to do, fairly.
No. I think that the. I like a lot of the locations that they pick to shoot in. I like some of the production design. You know, you made a point, you poked fun at, you know, they're at this the wedding at the end, and you see the new Twin Towers in the background. Mm. I kind of liked that whole design. I liked how they put all that together.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of this alternate future timeline where, you know, who knows, maybe he was the architect that brokered that deal and, you know, put those things together or whatever. And, you know, that's his work in the background. It's like, you know, the product of he and his wife and the product of he and his company kind of put together in this one scene, married together, where his son is also being married. I dug that concept and I dug the production design behind it. As far as what I think this movie did wrong, I think it failed in picking a tone.
Yeah.
It needed to pick its tone a lot earlier. It needed to decide, okay, we're going to give you something a little bit deeper. We're going to give you something a little bit more thoughtful than what you're used to getting. Their biggest mistake is to make you think in the first 45 minutes of this movie, it's going to be just a goofy Adam Sandler movie.
Right.
Because that's not what this is. And where you were able to look past it and appreciate it for what it became,
mm-hmm.
I resented it for wanting to be more than what it was originally trying to give me.
Yeah.
I felt like it didn't earn the moment where yep. I wanted to care about it. It didn't go through that rite of passage as a story that was going to make me go, okay, I'm on this ride with you. You didn't earn that.
Fair enough.
It was goofy, and then halfway through you decided you wanted to be a touching, thoughtful film. Fuck you. I'm not falling for that because you didn't earn it from me. It's almost like a reverse Up where I felt like Up like – basically held you down and punched you in the fucking mouth until you cared about this old guy. Like, fuck, fuck you. You're going to care about this old guy. He lost his wife who couldn't have children. Like, all right, right. Thanks for fucking manipulating my emotions so completely and transparently. I now care even if I don't want to. Yep. I care about what's going on here. And they just did the opposite of that in this movie.
Yeah.
I think that's
nicely put.
A big failure. If we were to make this movie today,
oh yeah,
How would you have put that together?
How would I cast it? Is that what you're getting at?
How would you cast it, and who would direct? I like oh, adding man. A director to this.
Oh, shit. I hadn't thought about a director. Well, I still want to keep this a comedy.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't want to go too dark with it, because they're, you can do that movie, you know, and have the consequences be so real and they're frightening. That's not this movie, though. You know, it's a movie about a magical remote control, so
uh-huh.
kind of got to keep it in the comedy. Somebody who can do comedy and can kind of delve a little bit into drama and is ready to be a leading man. Like, it's a tragedy he hasn't been cast to be a leading man yet. Neil Patrick Harris. You may yes. know him as Doogie Howser, or more recently from How I Met Your Mother. Fuck, what's his name?
Yeah, Barney.
Barney Stinson. I'm trying to think of the movies he's been in. He's mostly
he was
been
in Harold and Kumar.
He's in Harold and Kumar 1 and 2. He's coming out this summer in the Seth.
Oh, A Million Ways to Die in the West.
And I like him, but when he has those dramatic moments in How I Met Your Mother, like he can really sell. He's just a great actor overall.
Uh-huh.
And he can sing and dance. So if he's called upon to do so in this movie. So Neil Patrick Harris is the Adam Sandler character. You can also kind of see him being this business architect,
yeah.
And then having the funny moments, but playing the real, the heavy stuff later on. And so, since he's blonde, I'm gonna go with a blonde for his wife. You want to go back and forth?
No, we'll just go through the whole thing.
Not very inspired here, but Kristen Bell.
Oh,
she's,
okay.
She's hot enough for him. I see them together, and she's pretty good to look at too.
Uh-huh.
Kristen Bell fan here. For the David Hasselhoff, the asshole douchey boss.
I need to point out, like, I don't remember anybody's character name in this movie.
I don't either.
Except for Adam Sandler's.
And what is it, Michael?
Michael.
Yeah. Only just because we just saw.
Oh, and I remember the character named Morty, the Christopher Walken character.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, because he has a name tag on.
He has
for
a
most
name
of
tag
movie.
On, and his name comes into to, it's prescient.
Yeah.
Well, since we're talking about Christopher Walken, how about Ben Kingsley, Sir Ben Kingsley?
Oh, really?
Does he want somebody who can be kind of old
the
and
Mandarin.
Fatherly, but then also turn to be, I wouldn't call him an antagonist in this movie, but spoiler alert, he's the Angel of Death. So, yeah. Sir Ben Kingsley.
So he says. That I gotta tell you, man, that was a real eye roll moment for me.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was like, I've given you this remote. Now I'm the Angel of Death. I was like, come on, just fucking pick one thing. I'm sorry, go ahead. I don't mean to keep interrupting.
Didn't mind
you.
It so much. Ben Kingsley, yeah, he's the Angel of Death. The David Hasselhoff boss character. How about John Hamm, Don Draper?
That's not bad, man.
Mad Men. Because you need somebody who's like handsome, but can kind of play a douche. And we saw that in, what's the Kristen Wiig? Bridesmaid.
Uh-huh.
He's kind of the douchey
yes,
boyfriend.
He is.
So he can do comedy. He's not given the opportunity to do it. This would be a great opportunity for him. And then in there's the last one, the Henry Winkler role, playing the father of Neil Patrick Harris. How about Mark Hamill? How about we get Luke Skywalker playing the age? Can't you see him kind of like doing that quarter trick, doing magic tricks for his grandkids?
Yeah, he was doing it before he got the voice of the Joker gig.
That's
just
true.
For some change on the side of the road.
Also in an episode of Amazing Stories where he plays a homeless person. You ever seen that episode too?
No, it wasn't a story. It was a documentary filmed in real time.
Oh, sad but true. But Mark Hamill,
it's good to have you back, Mark.
Make a comeback before his actual comeback in episode 7 next Christmas.
Hey, man, his voice. Work as the Joker is fucking fantastic.
He's good.
Yeah. All right. So I only cast the four, well, what I considered the mains of
That's fine.
Movie. I did not recast the father character.
Oh.
Who would direct your version of Click?
Damn. Who can do comedy? But also do drama. How about Edgar Wright? Didn't
Edgar
we just
Wright?
Do Edgar
he's,
Wright last week?
He's not doing Ant-Man anymore, so
why
not?
There you go.
Yeah.
Edgar Wright.
There you go. Okay. Let me see. For the Michael character.
Mm-hmm.
I went with James Franco.
Ooh.
Because, and all pedophilia aside, I feel like James Franco is, you know that story, right?
No.
About the, you don't know that? Okay, so there's this this girl, she was visiting New York with her mother, she's from England.
Okay.
And she was visiting New York, and they ended up going to see one of James Franco's shows on Broadway. And then afterwards, they went to the stage door, and she took some pictures with him and stuff. And then she, like, tweeted them and, like, tagged him on it, and he was like, hey, what's your number? Like, he responds back, and he's like, hey, what's your number? And they, like, PM'd back and forth, and he finally got her number and started, like, texting messages to her and was trying to get her to, like, meet him at his hotel.
Knowing how old she was?
Knowing how old she was.
How old was she?
She was, like, 16.
What state were they in?
It's New York City.
Okay. Because in Hawaii.
Yeah, they weren't in. Broadway's not in Hawaii.
What about Thailand?
Thailand. Broadway's not in Thailand. So he was trying to get her to come back to his hotel, and she's like, no, maybe some other time when I come, blah, 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 blah. But, like, she ended up posting all this stuff on Twitter, like, just basically outing him. So besides that, though, I feel like James Franco's funny enough, but he's also talented enough to play young and an older version of himself.
That'd be great.
And he's also got one of those blank canvas kind of faces that, like, he could have. He would take well to the makeup that would age him.
True.
To play his love interest. It was funny because we both did a little bit of How I Met Your Mother.
Oh, really?
I went with Kobe Smulders.
Kobe Smulders.
As
I almost
the Kate
did that. I almost
character.
Did the entire cast of How I Met Your Mother in this movie. Jason Segel would be Morty.
Yeah. Oh my God, that would be funny. For my Morty, instead of Jason Segel, I went with Will Arnett.
Oh, ooh, great!
Because I feel like he would have played that character a lot more dry and a lot more sarcastic.
Yep.
And just the fact that, like, Christopher Walken said the name Michael like 8 million times.
Michael.
I kept going back to Arrested Development, and I'm like, Michael, Michael.
That'd be awesome.
Tricks are things whores do for money, Michael. And for the David Hasselhoff character, I went with a different David. I went with David Schwimmer. Because he's smarmy. He could be smarmy. He could be dickish. Did you ever see Band of Brothers?
I didn't, but I know what you're talking
about. Oh, my God. He did an episode of Band of Brothers where he was a drill sergeant.
I heard about that.
He was a fucking dick. Like, you hated this guy.
Yeah?
He can totally do, like, just totally despicable.
I believe that, but I don't believe him as a, kind of like a charismatic, over-the-top D-bag.
You don't think so?
Like, I think he can be an asshole and schmarmy. Schmarmy?
Schmarmy.
Shawarma.
Shawarma.
But only because, like, that would come out of his insecurities, not from his overconfidence. The
really?
From the Hoff. But I'd love to see him take a crack at it.
I would dig seeing something
Schwimmer.
Like that. Schwimmer. Yeah, David Schwimmer as the David Hasselhoff character. And I believe I would probably get, like, Adam McKay to direct this.
Oh, nice.
Just to, you know.
Yeah, he can do that.
Goofy comedy. I don't really know how much heart he could add to it. I'm sure Will Ferrell would make an appearance.
Of course. There you go. That would be the older. He'd be the father. The
he'd
Henry
be the
Winkler.
Father of Henry Winkler.
He's getting up there, man.
But you know what?
For
his
James
turn
Franco?
As the father character in the Lego Movie.
Which
not
I,
bad.
I just watched it yesterday,
did
by
you?
The way.
Yeah.
Just my second time seeing it, and man, does that movie hold up.
It does.
It's fantastic.
It's a really good film.
Oh, I love it.
I'd even put it down as, like, one of the best Batman movies in the past decade. It's definitely better than The Dark Knight Rises. All right, so that's all I've got for Click. And if you've got any ideas for casting, you, the listener, you can always write us on our Facebook page and just put a little comment on our page. What would you do for the movie Click? Just go to Facebook and in the search bar, just do the editing bay. That brings up our little logo, the lady with the bleeding eyes. And tell us what you think of this movie. Tell us what you think of other movies that you think that we should watch. We'll add them to the list. We're trying desperately to work through these things.
Yeah. We have a lot of new additions to that list, by the way.
So many.
Week.
I think I saw that Brian from Duncanville Bookstore said that we should watch Super.
Yes, which I've been wanting to.
Have you ever seen it?
No, I haven't yet.
Whoa.
I heard it's dark.
It's a very dark movie.
Yeah.
Ellen Page doing some shit that's like, wow.
That's what I hear.
But Rainn Wilson putting in a really good performance and Nathan Fillion with a really fucking funny cameo.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, so that'd be worth checking out. Maybe we'll do that in the next couple of weeks. But next week, we are going to be watching. What the hell was it that we agreed? Oh,
it's called
Jobs. We're doing that movie Jobs.
This is the Steve Jobs movie that came out. It was rushed into production after his death, exploiting it, some would say.
Yeah.
Came out last year starring Ashton Kutcher, the oddly cast Ashton Kutcher as Steve Jobs.
Was he the first choice?
No. Well, I can't imagine he would be. You know what?
I'd imagine maybe he got the gig because he was like a producer or something.
He was a financial backer on this. I'm not sure if he approached somebody or they approached him. Horribly miscast, as you'll see when we watch it next
week. I can't
wait.
I've never seen it.
Well,
I'm looking forward to it. So, yeah, next week we are going to be watching Jobs. But, yeah, get your suggestions in. And you can always check out our episodes on iTunes and on our website at editingbay.com. Not the editing bay.
not edit
edit bay.
Bay.
editingbay.com.
Never live that
down. Where you catch all of our old episodes. And you can, and you're hopefully going to be finding some new supplemental material. Joel and I were talking about before the podcast. We're going to start doing some alternate movie commentaries.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll start watching movies and you can load our commentaries up and listen to what we have to say.
Then we'll do Dark Knight Rises.
In real time. We should, oh my God. Dark Knight Rises would be us snoring for 2.5 hours.
Probably.
And doing Bane
impersonation. I need to go to the restroom.
You have my permission to pee. All right, guys. Oh, yeah. Also, when you're on the website, we've got those limited edition Editing Bay Live Show t-shirts that you could still buy. Joel, give us the information on that.
Well, you always throw it to me after you've thoroughly introduced it. No, they're t-shirts from our live event back a couple of months ago. If you missed it, where we talked about the Masters of the Universe. Got a little soundtrack going with your straw there. Thank you. We've got all sizes, all shapes. What is it, like small to triple XL?
Triple X.
So,
triple X.
If you're tiny or...
The things I'm going to do for my country.
Oh, Jesus. was my Vin Diesel? Very nice. But $15 on the website. And again, even if you never wear it, I suggest you purchase it and shadow box
and
it.
And make a quilt.
Or that.
Buy a few and make a quilt.
No, but then you'd miss out on the lovely design that Jeff Earnshaw came up with that I helped
design. No, but I'm saying you use the design as the quilt, as the design on the quilt.
Yeah.
$15, go to our website, editingbay.com.
Thanks.
Guys, thank you so much for listening. Jeff, thank you, as always, for recording and giving us, like, up-to-the-minute, like, pictures and updates on information and stuff.
That's right. It's like a PA over here.
Just completely producing the show. Joel, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Jeff.
And we'll catch you guys next week. Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.